So anyway, I was listening to Lauren's last week, and what I took away from that was, is Lauren was next to somebody who was 7'4", and he felt short for a change, and that was what I took out of the lesson. That, he, you have an issue with Mordecai here, right? So we'll see if we can't turn that around a little bit. Okay, so has anybody here ever been like passed over for a promotion, or maybe somebody got an award, or something that maybe you deserved, or pretty common, maybe you do all the work and somebody else gets the credit? Now that one's got, if you have a boss, that happens all the time, right? So that's kind of a given. But has anybody got a good story about that? Let's loosen up our jaws a little bit this morning. Anybody have one?
You know, I don't have one personally, but the film.
Oh, I like the secondhand ones better.
This is my husband. Yeah. And he, you know, the church has divided us because he's over there somewhere.
You know, those divisions in churches. There we go.
But when, you know, he worked for the sheriff's department, and when he tested for captain, he ranked like number 2 on the list or something. But they kept passing him over, and he's not. He's not a political guy, so to speak. He doesn't like the office politics and all that. And the office politics were such that because he wasn't playing the game, they kept passing him over until the list was almost ready to expire. And then he just said, the heck with this, and he went to the chief and said, I deserve this because... Essentially, but it was the office politics that kept.
Well, then he. Okay, now we're all hanging.
But he did make captain.
That almost qualifies. Who else? Somebody else had one. Oh, way back there.
I just was working at the company I was working for, gave me an award, a little check to go with it, just for the ideas that I came up with to save the company money.
Well, okay, so you got recognized.
I got recognized.
How'd that feel? And I'm actually glad you said that because...
Check felt good.
Well, he speaks, right? Well, I think, you know, I have... I know in sports this happens. Maybe you're a better player or you worked harder and the coach has a kid that's in there playing where you should be. This happens all the time, doesn't it? And this story starts out with something that may have happened like that. And we'll read that. I want you to just kind of keep that in mind and make it personal, because I think it's something we can all relate to, that we've maybe been passed over for something that maybe we deserve, or somebody else is taking credit for what we do. I know that it's happened to me, and I don't want to bore you with the stories because we could go on for a while. But that's how this story starts out, right? Because it says here in chapter 3 when we start, it says... After these things, well, what are these things? Well, that's from chapter 2 when Mordecai keeps the assassination from happening. And what does he get for it? Well, he gets listed in the Chronicles. That's it. Nothing else happens. Although, God's providence... This is going to come up later in the story, so remember this. This is very important. I love that the Bible is never extraneous, okay? So we're going to see that. And even here it says, after these things, and you go, what things? And it's referring back to that part of it where he, you know, is at the gate and he overhears this plot to kill the king, and he says something. She goes in and tells the king, these guys are hung, and so Mordecai's sort of a hero. And what does he get for it? He gets listed in the Chronicles, and that's about it. Okay, so we got to keep that in mind. That's how it starts. And then what I'll do is I'll just read here, and then we're going to kind of break this down and see what's going on. Now, this is an incredible book. In this chapter, Esther isn't even mentioned in this chapter, and yet here it is. The book, you know, it's going to talk about basically three people. So. I'll read through this, and then we'll go back and we'll see what we can find. After these things, King Ahasuerus promoted Haman, the Agagite, or the Agite, the son of Hammedatha, and advanced him and set his throne above all the officials who were with him. And all the king's servants who were at the king's gate bowed down and paid homage to Haman, for the king had so commanded concerning him. But Mordecai did not bow down or pay homage. Then the king's servants who were at the gate said to Mordecai, "Why do you transgress the king's command?" And when they spoke to him day after day, and they would not listen to him, he would not listen to them, they told Haman in order to see whether Mordecai's words would stand. For he had told him that he was a Jew. Okay, that's interesting. And when Haman saw that Mordecai did not bow down or pay homage to him, Haman was filled with fury. But he disdained to lay hands on Mordecai alone. So, as they had made known to him the people of Mordecai, Haman sought to destroy all the Jews, the people of Mordecai, throughout the whole kingdom of Ahasuerus. In the first month, which is the month of Nisan, in the 12th year of King Ahasuerus, they cast pur. Is Andy in here today? There you go. There it is, right? Remember that pur? That is, they cast lots before Haman day after day, and they cast it month after month till the 12th month, which is the month of Adar. Then Haman said to King Ahasuerus, "There is a certain people scattered abroad and dispersed among the peoples in all the provinces of your kingdom. Their laws are different from those of every other people, and they do not keep the king's laws, so that it is not to the king's profit to tolerate them. If it please the king, let it be decreed that they be destroyed, and I will pay 10,000 talents of silver into the hands of those who have charge of the king's business, that they may be put into the king's treasuries." So the king took his signet ring from his hand and gave it to Haman the Agite, the son of Hammedatha, the enemy of the Jews. And the king said to Haman, "The money is given to you, the people also, to do with them as seems good to you." Then the king's scribes were summoned on the 13th day of the first month, and an edict according to all that Haman commanded was written to the king's satraps and to the governors all over the provinces and to the officials of all the peoples, to every province in his own script and every people in his own language. It was written in the name of King Ahasuerus and sealed with the king's signet ring. Letters were sent by couriers to all the king's provinces with instruction to destroy, to kill, and to annihilate all the Jews, young and old, women and children, in one day, the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar, and to plunder their goods. A copy of the document was to be issued as a decree in every province by proclamation to all the peoples to be ready for that day. The couriers went out hurriedly in order by the king, and a decree was issued in Susa of the citadel. And the king and Haman sat down to drink. But the city of Susa was thrown into confusion. There you go. Quite a lot going on there, huh? So I want to break this right away, just kind of look at the characters. There's a lot of ways you can eat this elephant, but I want to start doing it that way. The first thing we have here is, after these things, King Ahasuerus promoted Haman, the Agite, the son of Hammedatha. And I hope I have that correction, or that pronunciation right. Because, you know, you use it so often. So. So the king took his signet ring from his hand and gave it to Haman, the Agite. So there it is again, the son of Hammedatha, the enemies of the Jews. Why do you think the Bible goes and says, like, hey, this is somebody, and they're from such and such a tribe? You ever wonder about that? It repeats it here. And I'll give you a little clue. Anytime the Bible repeats something, it's probably important to something, right? And it says, the enemy of the Jews, right? We're going to go back, and there's nothing extraneous. It's all connected, right? So let's take a look. Let's go back and see what in the world is the writer referring to. So if we go back to Exodus, and we'll start at Exodus 17. This is a story you probably have heard before. And it's the story where they raise Moses' hands when he's fighting, right? And they hold him up there. You guys are familiar with it. But let's go ahead and let's read this starting in verse 8. It says, "When Amalek came and fought with Israel at Rephidim. So Moses said to Joshua, choose for us men and go out and fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on top of the hill with the staff of God in my hand. So Joshua did as Moses told him and fought with Amalek. While Moses and Aaron and Hur went up to the top of the hill, whenever Moses held up his hand, Israel prevailed, and whenever he lowered his hands, Amalek prevailed. And I always thought, why didn't he just keep his hands up, right? Well, it tells us. But Moses' hands grew weary, so they took a stone and put it under him and sat on it. And he sat on it while Aaron and Hur held up his hands, one on one side and one on the other. So his hands were steady until the going down of the sun, and Joshua overwhelmed Amalek and his people with the sword. And then the Lord said to Moses, write this as a memorial in the book and recite it in the ears of Joshua, that I will utterly blot out the memory of Amalek from under heaven. Okay, you got that? So he says, I want you to remember this and write it down, because Dan's going to need this like 6,000 years later to make a point in the class. So that's one of the reasons, right? Okay, so let's go to the next part here. It says, now there was a Jew in Susa, the citadel, whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jair, the son of Shimei, and the son of Kish, a Benjamite. And Lauren, last week told you, who is Kish? Anybody look it up? Well, Kish, it mentions Kish, is none other than the king, Saul's father. So it's beckoning him back. It's saying, hey, go back and check this out. That's basically a little flag here saying, okay, who is Kish? Well, he's the father of Saul. And why is that important? Well, let's go take a look. So if you turn to Samuel 15, starting in verse 2, I'll read through this story. It's another story you're probably familiar with. It's a great story. And it says, thus says the Lord of hosts, and this is speaking through Samuel, I have noted that what Amalek did to Israel in opposing them on their way when they came out of Egypt. So there's the connection, right? Couldn't be any plainer. Now go and strike Amalek and devote to destruction all that they have. Do not spare them, but kill both man, woman, child, infant, ox, sheep, camel, and donkey. And I was talking with the guys this week when we were talking about this, and I said, what did the horses do, right? What did the oxen do? But he's saying destroy them. And you'll notice the edict that is in Esther 3. He says, destroy every man, woman, child. He didn't go after the animals. So, but it's very similar, isn't it? It's eerily similar. So you're saying, well, what does this have to do with this? So let's continue. So Saul summoned the people and numbered them in Telaim, and 200,000 men on foot, and 10,000 of the men of Judah. And Saul came to the city of Amalek and lay in wait in the valley. Then Saul said to the Kenites, now the Kenites are with the Amaleks, but he gives them a chance to get out of Dodge. He goes, go, depart from among the Amalekites, lest I destroy you with them, for you showed kindness to the people of Israel when they came out of Egypt. So the Kenites departed from among the Amalekites, and Saul defeated the Amalekites from Havilah as far as Shur, which is east of Egypt. And he took Agag, the king of the Amalekites, alive and devoted to destruction all the people with the edge of the sword. Okay, you guys getting this so far? Agag, right? And who is Haman? He's the great, 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 great grandson of this character. Okay? But Saul doesn't kill him. But Saul and the people spared Agag and the best of the sheep and the oxen and all the fattened calves and the lambs and all that was good, and would not utterly destroy them. All that was despised and worthless they devoted to destruction. The word of the Lord came to Samuel, and then basically he says, you know, I've regretted I ever made Saul king. And I'm going to skip down to verse 14. It says, Samuel meets Saul and he says, and I love this, is very famous. It says, Samuel said, what then is this bleating of the sheep in my ears and the lowing of the oxen that I hear? Saul said, they have brought them from the Amalekites, for the people spared the best of the sheep of the oxen to sacrifice to the Lord your God, and the rest we have devoted to destruction. So he's really
kind of saying, well, you know, we did destroy a bunch of stuff. Basically, he took and destroyed the junk and he took all the good stuff. Well, what's the good stuff? What do you think the good stuff is in this story? Well, number one, the women. Okay, so they're going to take the women. They're going to take the children, because what are the children good for? Chores, right, in those days. It's a whole different world back then, right? They actually worked these kids pretty hard, you know, probably too hard. So they're not fulfilling the command that the Lord told him. So this thing goes on, and he says, okay, Saul, you're done. And I'm going to go down to verse 24 now. Saul said to Samuel, I have sinned, for I have transgressed the commandment of the Lord and your words, because I feared the people and obeyed their voice. That's what he says. Now, all these verses before is Saul trying to wiggle out of it, right? And he can't. So he gets to this part, and he says, okay, to tell you the truth, the reason I didn't do it, I didn't want to disappoint the troops. That's the kind of leader he was. And then that's when, and he says, but I repent. And Saul said, too late. Or Samuel said, too late. Okay, so that's just to give you a little history of where we are today. And I think it's obvious, if Saul does his job, what's the point? Huh?
He wouldn't be there.
Yeah, yeah. If he follows through with this, Haman isn't around. And we don't have this threat to contend with later. Right? And God made the promise to Joshua and Moses, and it's going to be fulfilled years later by somebody else. This is God's providence at work. This is how God works in the Old Testament, the New Testament, and the Bible, in your life and my life. Something in your life has happened as a result of probably your great-grandfather or grandmother that you don't even know. And you don't even know what those issues are, right? Because we don't record things or anything like that anymore. But anyway, here you go. That's the setup, okay? That's how this book starts out. And it's important, and we'll see why as we move on. Okay, so let's take a look at Mordecai. And when Haman saw that Mordecai did not bow down or pay homage to him, Haman was filled with fury. Okay, so what is that issue for Mordecai here? Now remember, I think Lauren talked about this last week. They're not supposed to be here. The Jews are supposed to have migrated back, but there's a bunch of Jews that have stayed in these occupied areas. They've found good commerce. Maybe they've had families. Maybe there's intermarriage. We don't know all the reasons why, but they're not supposed to be there. And Mordecai is there. There's no prophets here. One of the reasons we think there's not a mention of God or more of that type of speak is because there's no prophet here. There's nobody here speaking on their behalf. There's no priest. There's no scribe. This is just Mordecai down at the gate. Okay? And so what is at issue for him? And does he have anything in common with Old Testament characters? What's the issue for him? The king said, somebody else is in charge now. If you'll notice, he took his signet ring and he gave it to Haman. He's abdicated his responsibilities. Now, remember, he's come fresh off of a big war. I don't remember, Lauren, how long was this war? Yeah, it was a long war. He'd lost a couple million troops. 5,000 of them came back, so it's been very costly, and he's here. He's a little worn out, and he's the type of king anyway, you know what? Vashti, she's out, you know. Esther, she's in, you know. Hey, Haman, you're in. And then pretty soon, Mordecai, you're out. He's just kind of a temperamental guy. He's got a drinking problem. He's glandular, obviously, as we found out last week. So, you know, that's what he's dealing with. But what's an issue for Mordecai here? He's a Jew. And what's the decree? What are you supposed to do? Huh? When Haman walks by, what are you supposed to do? Bow down. And why is that an issue for him? It's an act of worship. What commandment is that? First two, right? First two. You know, depending on how you want to look at that, right? So this is a bridge too far for him. He can't do it. And he says, no. This is basically what he does. I can't hear you. Right? And he goes, I can't hear you. And is this the same as any Old Testament characters that you have? Daniel, obviously, right? And Meshach, Abednego, and, yeah. Right? Anybody else? I'm going to tell you, this is all Old Testament characters. Because all Old Testament characters, including Saul, including David, all these guys, at some, if you read the book of Isaiah, it happens all the time, they get to a crossroads where they have to choose, don't they? And he's living there and he's going, okay, I don't know how kosher this is. I'm a little confused because of the culture, but I have to put my daughter, my adopted daughter, over in the harem. That's pretty hard to do, right? Or we think it's hard to do. It should have been hard to do. There's a lot of things, dress. I mean, look at Joseph, probably looked more like a Egyptian than he did, a desert dweller, because he was acculturized. But he held on to that, right? So all Old Testament characters, you'll notice, somewhere in the story, they get to make a choice. Saul had a choice. Who did he listen to? Men. What is the result? So now, Mordecai's making a choice. And what is that choice? He's not going to do it. He's not going to bow down. So he's made an act of obedience. And what is the result of that? What's the result of him saying no? Huh? Oh, boy. Actually, I think it's just a little further down the spectrum of anger when you're in fury. I was thinking about that. Oh, he's really ticked off, right? No, he's furious. I love the choice of words the writer uses here. Oops. Now, you would think that, you know, that he might be sitting there as a Jew. He's a proud state. We've been consumed by Nebuchadnezzar, and now we have the Persians over us, and they want to kill the king. You know what? I'm just going to let them, right? But we don't get any indication like that. We don't see Daniel trying to undermine King Nebuchadnezzar, right? We don't see that little gal in Naaman, the whole story of Naaman, the little maidservant. She's the one that saves his life. And in all likelihood, she's a slave because of what this guy did. So we're seeing in action, we're seeing the saints of the Old Testament living out Jesus' charge of loving thy enemies. Mordecai is not going to go against the state. He understands, you know, Romans, where it says, you know, God puts people in power. And yet, there's a point, isn't there? If he was an insurrectionist or a revolutionary, would he have protected the king? And the answer is no. Okay, so the next one is, how is Mordecai to be a loyal citizen and a loyal Jew? How are we, as Christian believers, as aliens, strangers in a world where our citizenship is of heavenly origin, how are we supposed to live? How's he going to do this? How's he going to say, no, I'm not breaking the first commandment, and yet I'm going to be a loyal subject to the king? That is very, somebody said Daniel. That was Daniel's dilemma, right? He ends up running the empire, but he didn't compromise, even though they set him up, right? So that's the challenge, isn't it? That's a challenge for them over and over again once they've been taken over. But how about us? How's it difficult to live as a Christian today? What are you guys running into? Now, what's that? We just got to make new laws. Start all over again, right? Just redo the 10? Dave, or do you think, you know?
Let's be activists and make new laws.
Make new laws, okay. Okay, well, that's one idea. Who's willing to follow Dave? Okay, some of you young folks, what are you guys running into? What are you young men and women running into today? We have children in school. Anything? Can you help me out here? How about us older folks? You notice how I said us? Does it gall you to see somebody burning the flag? Anybody over 50? You know what? I said that in jest, but it's really true. People don't have the same respect for the Stars and Stripes as somebody like you and I, right? From our generation. That was like, oh man, you burned the flag. Are they putting them in jail? We were surprised that you couldn't put him in jail for that. I guess we didn't read the Constitution, right? But what are some of the things that are going on today that, okay, I live in America, I'm a good citizen, I'm not going to break the law, but I'm going to do what Mordecai did. Well, come on, if we can't talk about it at church.
Tolerance.
Yeah, don't rock the boat. Or tolerance has become, you must not only accept my point of view, but you have to affirm it. Isn't it amazing how terminology has changed? Terminology in marriage has changed, right? It wasn't all that long ago when it was just a man and a woman and it was the law of the land, but that's no longer a deal at all. Sadly, in some of our churches, it's not even a deal. I was raised Lutheran, as some of you know, and one of the Lutheran churches I used to frequent in Reno has a female priest who is married to a female. Excuse me. So these are affronts to maybe our Jewish or Judeo-Christian ethic that are based on the Ten Commandments. They're based on Torah. And they're under assault today like they never have been before. And the question is, how do we live in that where we say, listen, I'm not going to be for assassinating the president, but on the other side, I'm going to put my fingers in my ear when you tell me some of these things. And what are these things, right? This is very tough stuff that these issues are being brought up just in this. That's no different for Mordecai back then. Except for now, it's life and death, isn't it? Turns out. Yeah.
Not to be contrarian, but I'm not sure that this never happened like it is today. I'm thinking about the Holocaust.
Yeah, I don't think... Yeah.
I'm making a statement, but I'm not sure what it has to do. So maybe I'll just withdraw it. But I hear that quite often that...
Yeah, I think you're correct on one hand. I don't know that it's ever been this bad in America for us. And I think that those are pretty stark lines, although back in those days, I'm not saying that it was easily blended because it kind of just snuck in there. And in retrospect, we go, how did they ever let that happen, right? And I think that's what happens when you look backwards. You go, wow, what were we thinking, right? So you have a great point there. But I think our country... it's only 200 years old, but never in the history of Sweden or England have having gay marriage, transgenderism, a lot of these other issues, those have never been present in those societies. They are now. The last 50 years, it's really accelerated. That's just a fact. Yeah. Excellent.
I think that we're American citizens when we, Judeo-Christian America, allegiance to law. We have to have, a Mordecai view that we're aliens and strangers. This is our home. I'll live at peace. I won't disrupt, but I know that this isn't ultimately where my loyalty is.
That's excellent. And I'm going to prove why I think that's excellent because I wrote this down. Okay, this is what I wrote down. We've been born again to a living hope by the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. We have a whole set of values that are different from whatever society that we live in, regardless of the country. Right? So, a guy in Sweden, since I'm Swedish, I might as well use my hand, so pick on what you are, right? So, a guy in Sweden who's a Christian, we are the same family now, aren't we? Okay. Whether it is, and this is going to lead us, and I think Scripture we see this time and again, and there's no better example than when we get to Acts. You remember in Acts 4, the apostles have come out. They've seen the resurrection, and they're preaching the gospel, the new gospel, and they're preaching it primarily to Jews, oddly enough. And the Jews have rejected that, and so they turn them over to the law, and they says, quit preaching the news, the good news. Quit this so-called good news of yours, namely that Jesus Christ died and he rose. Okay, stop. Pretty blatant. And this is what they said. Whether it is right in the sight of God to listen to you, rather to God, you must judge, for we cannot but speak of what we have seen and heard. So there's a point, you know, as this, you know, if you read Revelation, if you read how these things progress, there may be a point that you're like Mordecai where you have to choose. I'm thinking it's very likely that you all will at some point in your life, if you haven't already. You're going to have to make that decision. We make those decisions when it comes to blatant sin. Right? All the time. You know, if you're struggling with drug abuse, you know, you make that decision. All the time. And sometimes you fail. But it's important to understand that it has ramifications. Okay, is there a contrast between Mordecai and Saul? Is there, what's the contrast? What do you guys think? Help me out here.
Yeah, you said that Saul actually wanted to please
the people. He did. There's a contrast, right? What else? Yeah, that's true. Well, he said he was a Jew, whatever that meant, right? Yeah. Yeah, no, that's true. I hadn't thought about that, Tim. You know what the thing about obedience is? A lot of times when you're obedient, it can look like a bad decision at the time, huh? I mean, if I'm Mordecai and I go, I'm not doing this, and then the next day or whenever this happens, it actually happens a little while longer, I find out not only is my decision going to kill me, it's going to kill everybody. Maybe I should have just bowed down. Right? And, consequently, disobedience can oftentimes, in Saul's case, when he made that decision, he's like, phew, these guys are going to really be ticked off at me. They've been fighting hard. We've been riding for a long time. Here's all this food. Here's all this plunder. Here's all this booty. If I say no, you know, they're really going to be upset with me. So I just say yeah, and everything's kosher. A little play on words there, isn't it? So everything's cool, and it looked like a great decision right up until Samuel comes to him and says, hey, what am I hearing? Guess what? You're out. Right? But here's the other thing about disobedience and obedience. It always, always affects other. It's never an existential matter. You know, a lot of times, and this is what leads to men's addiction into pornography, they think that over there in the closet, when they're doing this, that it only affects them. Right? And there's so many sins that you think, you know what? This is only going to affect me. I had a mother who was, I'm going to see in heaven again. She's a godly woman, but she smoked for 30 years of her life. And it cut her life short. And you could say, well, is her life affected her? Yeah, you know what? It affected my whole family. I miss her today. And she could have been here because that's what killed her. So these things that we do always affect everybody. You cannot sin. The Bible shows us that sin just doesn't stay where you want it to. And consequently, guess what? Obedience has the same effect, but the other way. Although it doesn't look like it at this point for Mordecai. It looks like not a good decision, right? That's the thing about disobedience. And I think that's probably something none of us really want to hear. But it's true. It's true. Okay, so let's talk about Haman for a minute. As we get close, oh, we're good. How mad is Haman? We talked about this. He's furious. Okay, does this look like the right amount of fury for this? What's he mad about?
What's he mad about?
He feels disrespected? Because somebody didn't grovel before him?
What? Is that because of the past history? Because now
yeah, I think there's something going on here. The Bible tells us enemy of the Jews. Huh. How long did it take for him to be an enemy of the Jews? Do you think he doesn't know the history?
I think he probably does.
Yeah.
He knew.
Interesting. The Jews believe that Haman was the cause of Daniel's death. Huh? How about that? He was an old man, and years before we even meet Esther, she's probably very, very young. If you talk to Jews, they will tell you, don't know, it was Haman's a character. We're very well acquainted with him. It's not in the Bible. Can't prove it. It's not written down in the book I trust, but that's their tradition. So he's got, apparently, it looks like there's something going on there. But what's the deal here? Why is he so angry? Why all the fury? If you want, just turn to chapter 4 in Luke. And you'll be familiar with this. You'll notice that starting in Egypt really is where it's most blatant. You remember the Pharaoh? How did we get Moses to Egypt? Remember what happened there? What's the very beginning of Moses? He's in a river, right? Why? What's that? Yeah. So we got a Pharaoh who's drowning babies, male babies. Why?
Population control.
Population control, huh? This is a funny. Yeah, well, I don't want to make a joke. Well, yeah, he's fearful of these people. He wants to exterminate the race. Right? So it happens there. We see it here. When's another time we saw this where we were killing babies? Herod, right? That's a New Testament example right away. This is nothing short of Satan. This is Satan acting. This is a character that Satan has. And there's a whole genre of material in the Old Testament and in when you get to the New Testament where Satan is showing up with the express mission of trying to prevent Messiah from coming, and then when Messiah is born, trying to keep Messiah from getting to that cross. So Satan we're locked in the battle. It starts in Genesis 3:15, as we talked about that first time. So it's there, and you'll notice something here. When Jesus is baptized, and he goes out into the desert, and after he's good and hungry, you see this exchange with him. And the devil said to him, "If you are the Son of God, command this stone to become bread." And Jesus answered him, "It is written, man shall not live by bread alone." And the devil took him up and showed him all the kingdoms of the world in a moment of time and said to him, "To you I will give all this authority and glory, for it has been delivered to me, and I give it to whom I will. If you will worship me, it will all be yours." You catch that? That's something that Satan has been after from the very beginning. That's part of the fall up there in heaven. He wanted to supersede God. And he has not quit, and he didn't quit, and here it is, right there, the Son of God himself in a very compromised position, saying, "Hey, if you just do this, I'll give you all this." And yeah, I don't know about you, I just go like 2 days without food, and you know, I'm pretty much yours. That's it. And 40 days, and he holds on. So behind all this is just Satan. And we see it. Okay, so decrees. The king decree becomes law. There are lots cast, and wouldn't you know it, the Jews are to be exterminated before the Passover. It's one day before the Passover. What do we make about that? You think that was just a coincidence? What are you guys thinking about here? So what's Passover?
Yeah.
Yeah. delivering them from Pharaoh, right? Right? Why was it so important that they get delivered from Pharaoh? Do you think they were, how are they doing on their own? They had 400 years to work this out, right? How are they doing?
Slaves.
It was getting worse, wasn't it? And why was it bad? Why do you think it was bad, going from bad to worse? And the Bible actually tells us.
Egyptians despised them.
They despised them, right? And what was their aim eventually?
Get back to the promised land.
The Egyptians, what was their aim? Ultimately, they were going to annihilate them. They were going to do them in. But you know what we're going to do? We're going to get some bricks made first. We're going to literally work them to death. And they were on their way to doing it. But they, at some point, they were going to exterminate them. Sounds crazy, but that's what that was the ultimate plan. And the Jews were not going to get delivered, were they? By them, by their own hand. And so they remember that. On that day, we remember that. We had no way out, none, but we get delivered, right? It's an impossible situation for them. So I got to look over here because this isn't in my notes. So here's the aha moments that should lead up to maybe a bell going off in your head. If we keep moving on with the story, we'll find the very means planned for their destruction was the means that God was going to use for their deliverance. Okay, I put you to sleep if you're not getting a picture yet. Does that remind you of anything? How capable are you of saving yourself after you die? What are your chances of living after you die on your own? There's none. There's zero, isn't there? And if we read through this story, we see that the very means that Haman is going to use to exterminate the Jews is the very means that God uses to deliver them. Sound familiar? In the Old Testament and the New Testament, the devil meant to put Jesus on the cross to exterminate him and kill the promise in Genesis. And yet God, what does he do? He uses the cross to deliver them. Sort of an aha moment, huh? Pretty cool. Don't miss it. Okay, the chapter concluded with Ahasuerus and Haman settling down to a highball while the citadel is tossed in confusion. Why do you suppose there is confusion? Now, if we go back to this and you read, you know, Esther is the hardest book to find, isn't it? Okay, so if we go back to chapter 3 in the back, what does it say is going on here when the decree goes out? It says we're going to put it in what? Different languages, right? And then what are we going to do? We're going to send it all out. It's 127 providences, probably about 130, 140 different languages. And so you've got to bring in people who can read and write, which is not easy in those days. And then they have to write all this out and figure out how to communicate all this throughout all the providence. And you bring them into the citadel, so there's all this activity going on. And it's probably taking quite a few people. And if you're sitting there and you're going, okay, who's in charge here? What's going on? Right? What is all these people going on here? And are they really going to kill my neighbor, Kevin, who, granted, he's a little weird and has some funny dress and maybe his diet's a little strange, but you know, he's really good at commerce. He sells me goats, and they're prime goats and lambs and all sorts of things. Why are they going to kill Kevin? He's the nicest guy in the world. I get why they're going to kill Andy, but not Kevin. So you have this going on, and it's a state of confusion, and you just got to wonder. They got to think, okay, he'll do it too, because he just went and fought a war that wasn't successful, and only, look, millions of them left, and 5,000 came back. So we know he's capable. We know he doesn't care about life. He got rid of his wife. So they're sitting there going, not again. And I love how the Bible says, hey, they were thrown into a state of confusion. They're panicked, right? who's in charge here? Really an unstable guy. Okay, so what do I got next here? A quote, I don't know who said it, but I liked it. It is a reality that the older I get, the less time I have. And yet, it seems like God asked me to wait more as I age. Does anybody relate to that? All the old people are going, yeah, that's me. I don't discover this from an emotional basis, but on the basis of God's word. The Bible is chock full of stories where God is asking his people to wait and trust. Waiting on God is evidence of trusting on God. And we're going to find Mordecai is going to have to wait and trust, and so is the rest of them, including all the people who are in confusion. Everybody's going to have to wait. And then some will trust. The providences of God are never self-interpreting, and it is usually wrong for us to try and understand what is going on in the immediacy of the moment. Boy, that's a good quote. Alistair Begg gives that one. Yeah, think about that for a moment, huh? How often when something hands down, I get passed over the promotion, and I'm really upset? You know, it's wrong to get overly upset from these things as a Christian. Just as bad, I think it's wrong to get overly overconfident when you get like the promotion itself. It does come to you and you go, ha ha, look at me, I did it, right? I am really something else. Okay? So there's that balancing point, where should you be? And that can be difficult in the moment. And then what lessons can we learn from Esther in chapter 3? And the first thing is the right vision. So I like to look, I want to be forward-thinking. Doesn't that sound good? I'm a forward-thinking guy. What do you think about that? And does the Bible tell you to be forward-thinking? Think about it. Do you think it does? Huh? What's that? Not promised tomorrow. The Bible does have us looking forward, doesn't it? But it's forward to where? We're pilgrims here, right? So we have to be forward-thinking as Christians. And yet, much of the Bible, when we study it, looks back and we have the opportunity to learn from other people's mistakes. And we get to see something very important, that God fulfills his promises. So you're better off looking in the rearview mirror more than you are the windshield here. If you're a Christian. Look back. And look back in your own life. You know what? I don't know what God's doing here, but I can look back and go, God has been faithful in my own life, even when I've made bad decisions. Right? And by the way, he is going to save a people who are in disobedience right now. Thank God he's not doing this based on obedience. He's doing it based on mercy and grace. And by the way, that's why he answers your prayers, is because he's merciful. Not because you did anything to deserve it, right? So, and that's good news. That's really the good news here. So far, it's kind of been a little negative class, but this is the good news, is your right vision. You can look back and see what he's done, not only in your life, but in the lives of other people. And we're doing a case study. It looks pretty bleak for Mordecai right now. And the people, and by the way, if I'm the other people, I'm really not very happy with Mordecai. You know what? Why didn't you just bow down? Now I'm going to die. Thanks a lot, bud. Right? And he says, you know, maybe you ought to read the Ten Commandments or something like that. Right timeline. When was the promise given to kill the Amalekites or the Agites? When was that given? In way back in Torah. And he says, I'm going to tell you something, write it down. I'm going to kill every one of these guys. That's what God's saying. And he doesn't decide to do it all the way until Samuel. Right? We've gone from, what, 600 years? I don't know. My timeline could be wrong there. But it's a long time in the future when he decides to have Saul actually carry this out. How many people lived and died thinking, you know what, those guys really bug me? Those Democrats really bug me? When's he going to get rid of them? Or those Republicans really bug me? When's he going to get rid of whatever it is, you know, when's he going to follow through on this? And people lived and died and never saw it. Are there things in your life that you may not live to see? But God has promised them to you nonetheless. Think about Abraham. He only was given a promise. He didn't get to see Jacob. He was dead before Jacob came along, who was actually the culmination of his promises. But he believed. And guess what? You can look back and say, you know what? God was good. He did that. So the timeline, the right timeline, God's timeline is so different from ours. Right? This sounds like bad news, but you know what? The Bible has to be real. You have to read this and go, you know, this looks like the world I live in. Right? If it doesn't, then it's a fairy tale. Right remembrance. Right remembrance. You got to have right remembrance. You got to remember those things. And then you have to get the right news channel. What do I mean by that? The right news channel is the gospel, the good news. Right? What's the good news? Yeah, Jim talked about it a little earlier. One day he's coming back. One day he's going to make all this. What is it? Every tear will be dried up. Isn't that one of the things he promises? What else does he promise? Wait, come on, you guys are children of promise. What are some of the promises that you look forward to as a child of God?
Live for eternity.
I'm sorry?
You're going to live for eternity.
Live for eternity. I don't even know what that means. Yeah, you know, isn't that, you know, who's in charge here? Is that how he started this? There'll be somebody in charge here that doesn't make errors. That doesn't have, I mean, you just look at who's running the show here. You go from Ahasuerus to Haman. Is that bad to worse, or is that, I don't know. It's so bad. And we don't have human leadership. We actually have somebody who has the right motives in mind, that isn't selfish. That somebody, wouldn't you like somebody to make decisions for you? And this person was willing to die for you? Sounds pretty good to me. What else? What else?
No more pain.
No more pain, no more suffering. We started out, Jim said, you know, somebody's doing the balance thing. Bam, fall over. Guess what? You get really cool bodies. Huh? This was sort of wearing out. I got a bad hip too, and thanks for telling me that the hip thing isn't working out for that other gal. I'm not going to do it now. So thanks a lot, Jim. But you get new bodies. Remember, there's a resurrection here. Did you ever stop and think about that? Did you guys see that? Man. That was a good move. Dancing. But think of, huh?
You're still a young man.
Yeah, no, I'm not. You get a new body. Jesus rose, and, you know, I always tell people, you know, you open up Acts, they question him. He's got 40 days here, and then he's going to leave. And they question him. And they go, when are you going to throw the Romans out? And I'm like, no, that's the best you could do? I'm like, okay, I'd like one question with a follow-up. Number one, that body you have seems pretty cool. Okay? What was it like coming back from, like, being dead? That's number one. Number two, do I get one exactly like that? Can you tell me more about this body that you have? Come on, tell me you're not interested in that. That's something, you know, we don't even talk about that because it's so crazy. But, you know, you're getting a new body. What else? Anything else? What's the good news? What should we be telling people? That God is absolutely trustworthy and that he's in control. That Biden isn't in control, or Trump isn't in control, or the Congress isn't in control. Men are not in control anymore. And actually, all the things that are happening right now, I don't have to sweat it because God is in control. How do I know that? Because I look back and I can see what he's done. And I know it may not even happen in my lifetime, but it's going to happen. And the things that he does are good. They're good. He's going to save Mordecai. Spoiler alert, he's going to save Mordecai. It's just the way he does it is very cool. And next week, we're going to start getting introduced to the first steps in that plan by Eric, who's going to do an excellent job, I'm sure. So, and that'll be it. Any questions or any other observations you want to make? I see Jim standing up. He's either stretching or saying, you're out.